Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Katie Weaver Show. This is Katie. I'm your host. I'm so happy to be here. I started the show in the process of trying to get some tea poured into my cup, so I'm all discombobulated and weirdly not centered on the screen. So I'll fix that. Okay, I don't know what's going on. There we go. Okay, well, whatever. Technology, just do what you're gonna do, I guess. Hi, how are you? How is everybody? I hope that you are all very well. There we go. That's what I needed. I have this weird stomach thing going on, and mint tea is just saving my life. I'm living on it. I'm all here for it. I wish I was still growing mint. I used to have a ton of mint. Now it kind of got choked out by other things, but I sure would be drying it now and using it. Anyway, besides all of that, this is me living on mint tea, but I am so glad to be here. I hope that you guys are all well. I hope you had a good weekend. We stayed home. The last 2 weekends in a row, I've been out of town. This next weekend, oh, I have a big adventure. I'll tell you about it. But it was really nice to just take a day at home and or a weekend at home and just work on stuff. So one of the things that we worked on most specifically and particularly was a ton of pottery projects. We have a whole bunch of bisqueware that was ready to be painted or glazed. And we did that. Oh my gosh. My computer's got some weird proclivities right now. For whatever reason, everything I save from Facebook is saving as a JFF. Are you even familiar with JFFs? Because I'm not, and none of my programs will use them. So I even saved them a different way today, and specifically saved them as JPEGs, and it happened anyway. I do not know how to win this. But I have some things I want to show you. So let me see. Let me see if I can get them to upload. But yeah, we did a ton of pottery this weekend. And it was awesome. So I'm very excited about that. One of the things that we did that turned out so amazing, and I have to tell you about the amazing use of technology here. And it is the use of AI, and I understand the arguments against AI, and I agree with them as well, but this has really just turned into something that was so cool. So I went to an AI program and asked it to reimagine or imagine for me a photo of or a line work drawing, actually, of a cauldron mug with a large handle and 3 feet. So I was able to get a decent line work drawing of that. And then I took that and I went to another AI program that I subscribed to that you can put in pictures of things, and this AI program will draw, or not draw, but will come up with a 3D print file for you, which is huge because that is a level of computing that I don't have. Neither of us do, actually. So, and it's really not foolproof. Sometimes it works out really well, and sometimes it makes you the weirdest shit you've ever seen. So, you know, it doesn't always work, but when it does, it's pretty cool. So, with that being said, I was able to draw or to come up with a 3D print file. Then Scott took the 3D print file and altered it somewhat to make sure it was what we wanted. And then he printed this item, this mug. So we had a printed version of it. And then we took the printed version of it and we went through the process of making a slip mold. And so what slip molds are is they're molds that you pour liquid clay into that You make them out of plaster. So you pour the liquid clay in, and the plaster leaches out the water, so that what you have left is your item, right? That's how the science of it works. It's actually, I think, pretty amazing. So we went through the process of making a slip mold. We've never made one before. Lots of steps, lots of hours. It's hard work, but turned out to be very worth it. So we made the slip mold. Then the slip mold had to dry for a few weeks before it was able to be used because, you want it to be super dry so that it can actually absorb the stuff that you're trying to absorb, obviously, so on and so forth, right? So once that was done, we went ahead and poured the mug. And once the mug was poured, then we took the mug, we cleaned it up. We dried it for a couple of weeks. Then we put it in the kiln and heated it to 1850 degrees to turn it into bisque. And bisque basically is clay that is partially fired. So it's not vitrified, meaning that it's still absorbent, but it's strong enough that you're not going to break it by handling it. Then I went to the process of painting it and glazing it. And then it went back into the kiln to be heated to about 2250 degrees. And this is what I got. I'm really in love with the glaze. It turned out so pretty. And some of the depth I know is very hard to see, but this is how it turned out. Fatal flaw. I didn't notice until we bisqued it that the handle was hollow. I don't know if you can tell. Yeah, you can see it. See? This can't ever be a mug because you can't sanitize that, right? You get your coffee inside of that hollow handle, and how are you getting that out? You can't. So it's going to be a planter, and we've already poured a new one and made sure that the handle was completely solid because obviously, that has to be the case for it to be food safe. But I am so in love with the way this turned out and so blown away at the process of making it with the tech available to us. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So, wanted to share that one with you because I'm still blown away at how cool this is and how the process of it worked. Kind of sad that handle is empty, but. It's okay, right? It'll be a beautiful planter for something small, or even just, I'm just going to take it to our fair, but it'll be beautiful on somebody's desk with, some pens and pencils and stuff in it, or whatever they decide to use it for. So all is not lost, but and I'm just making another one, so it'll be fine. And now I've discovered a glaze pattern here that I think is really freaking cool. So anyway, that's what's up. I forgot to say, I was too busy worrying about my tea, that I am over on 12radio.com and I'm over in the chat room. And you can find that by heading over to 12radio.com and click on the chat button. Or you can watch this rather than listen if you want to. And you can do that by going over to Facebook or YouTube and look for Katie Weaver Domestic Mystic. I have got a show for you. I'm so excited. And you probably realize that I put a fair amount of time into prepping for my shows and for Luminous and trying to bring really interesting content. And oh, today I'm so excited. So excited. Yes. Right, Sid, it is so interesting all the steps that it takes. It's just fascinating stuff. All of this pottery and whatnot. I actually have the bisque last night and it's too hot to take out of the kiln yet, so I can see if I was successful or not. But I'm still working on my ghost bathroom and I made these cute little ghosts that are going to be shower curtain clips that hang along the top of the shower curtain. And I made a ghost soap dish for the sink. So fingers and toes crossed that they didn't blow up in the kiln. But and those weren't poured, they were hand built out of clay. And oh gosh, my skills are so well funny, but it's fine. I'm here for it. But here's a few other pieces that came out that I was really happy with. Two little watering cans that turned out so cute. I think yellow and blue is such a pretty combo. I also think gray and pink is a beautiful combo. I made two of these little heart baking dishes. I was so in love with them. I love the way the glaze came out, but they ran onto the kiln shelf, and to get them off the kiln shelf, they had to be broken. You can see the break in this one somewhat. I actually glued this one so that it doesn't keep breaking, so I can just leave it on the counter to throw sunglasses and keys and random candy and stuff into, because I don't want to throw it away. But the other one got broken into many pieces, and poor Scott, in doing so, got quite the cut. I noticed in this picture you can see a package of Band-Aids right underneath the heart. That's why. Just another little dish. This plate I am madly in love with. And another bowl. And then these guys. These are some molds I got from a lady here whose great grandma was a ceramicist, and these molds are from the 60s. And they're just these cute little leaf dishes. The littler one, you can't really tell the long one, but it is convex. You know, it is, or not, it's convex? Well, anyway, it is dish shaped. How's that? I'm mostly in love with these guys. They turned out so pretty. Anyway, so I'm so excited because we have a fair. We have the Fall Psychic Fair at Healing Hands on the 12th of October. So that's basically what I'm doing right now, is trying to get ready for that fair. And then I'm going to start thinking about Christmas, because a lot of people in my family are going to get pottery this year. I'm sure they've already figured that out. And then I just wanted to share a sweet story about Luca. Now here's my Luca. This is a shot. This is in my office next to my chair. He spends every single show with me. You guys don't know it because he doesn't like to be on camera, but this is him with this towel. So he stole this dish towel out of a clean laundry basket a couple weeks ago and just carried it into my office and threw it down on his bed and laid down on it. And he's been cuddling with it ever since. He doesn't try to get underneath it like Bruno probably would, but it's just his blankie. It's his. And that bed is his. And if anyone else lays on the bed, he paces around and whines and gets real nervous about it because it's his. And a few days ago, Nellie drug the blanket off of his bed, or the dish towel, and I've just let him keep the dish towel. I'm like, what am I out, right? He can have it. That can be his blankie. So she drug it off of his bed the other day, and it didn't take him very long, and he drug it back onto his bed and laid down on it. By God, it's his blankie and he wants it. Isn't that funny and cute? He's killing me with his blankie. I just think it's so sweet. Okay. Trying to get back to business here. Yes, I just think it's adorable. He's so funny. So there's Luca and his little blankie. So let's talk about the show today, because I have got plans for us. We are going to do an 8-minute meditation later on in the show, so be know that. If you're wanting to take part in that, you're going to want to be in a spot where you can relax for a little while and join me in that. But before that, right, Sid? Well, right. Sid said that's so cute. How Luca claimed the dish towel shows how smart dogs are. They want agency. Perhaps that towel is extra fuzzy or something. It isn't fuzzy, but it's just, I think you're right, though, that it's his. These beds are important to him. They're his. There's actually two, and he alternates which one he sleeps in. Right now, he's in the mushroom bed, but the little mushroom bed I bought for Rico last summer, while Rico was still with us, and when I brought it home, I was trying to show it to Rico. I was like, "Hey, here's your new bed." And Luca was like, "Oh, thank you so much," and jumped in it. And he's way too big for it, but he crams himself in there and curls up in it. And he was so proud of that bed. It was not Rico's for a single day. But they're both sitting behind my desk, and so he alternates which one of them he lays in. But no one else really lays in these beds. Nellie sometimes will lay on the pink one, but again, he doesn't fight her, but he doesn't like it. These are his beds. Thank you so much. Oh gosh, he's just a funny guy. All right, well, let's get into it. So let me tell you what encouraged this episode. I found an article about a piece of elk skin that was found that was believed to be by the Pawnee, and it is a star chart that is very accurate to the night sky. And it has been dated back to the 1600s. And I just thought that was really fascinating. And of course, we've heard a lot about, ancient astrologers and astronomers and the crossover between the two, but I thought it would be fun to do an episode in which we talk about a bunch of these things and I share with you some of the stuff that I have found. So I'm going to bounce back and forth between Luminous and between a slideshow that I made for this purpose. But that's where this came from, was just reading a really fascinating article about this star chart and just really wanting to share it with you guys because it's amazing. So I called this edition of the magazine Star Wisdom Across Time. So, in my musings, I put together an entire article about this. So, the star chart is believed to be painted on elk skin and used by the Skiri Pawnee priests to tell an origin story, which I just thought was an incredible thing. So, it wasn't just a map of the stars, it was also a ritual tool. And their story all rolled into one. Isn't that what astrology really is in so many ways? So we know that across the globe, honestly, for time immemorial, we know that people have been trying to find meaning in the heavens, right? People have been looking to the stars to try to find meaning for time immemorial, just like we are. So I wanted to go through some of the most amazing things that have been found. So we'll start with the Pawnee. All right, so this is the star chart in question. Get back to my notes here. Okay, so this, of course, was discovered in North America, pre-contact. They figure around 1600 AD, painted on elk skin, and it wasn't about navigation. It was about their origin story, and it was passed down from one priest to the next, or leader. I think priest is such a strange term for that, but it's fine. Each constellation carried a place in the tale of how the universe came to be. Isn't that amazing? So they had this map or chart, and then they had all of their oral history that was passed on from one spirit leader to the next in sharing these stories and this piece of elk hide. And then we have the Malapan. Let me check. Mulapine. Mulapine. I put together a list. I knew I wasn't going to get these right. The Mulapine was dated from Mesopotamia 1000 BCE. It was two clay tablets that list over 60 constellations, rising and setting dates, and celestial omens. This was a part, it was kind of like a farmer's almanac, and partly an astrological guide, and partly a cosmic order book, kind of just all mixed up together. It's further proof that the ancients used the stars in multiple ways, a lot the way we do now. Okay, and now we have these are the Egyptian astronomical ceilings. This is from Senemut's tomb ceiling. It shows the northern and southern skies with star tables, planets, and decans. This has been tied to timekeeping, as well as to divine order and royal legitimacy, all tied in together. If the stars said it was so, by God, then it was so. God, let's hope that our current governments don't start trying to use the stars for their legitimacy. Please don't. Oh no. Anyone, anyone. Okay, then there is the Dendera zodiac. Look at how cool this is. So this was from 1st BCE. It was carved into the Temple of Hathor, and it's a cosmic mandala of planets, zodiac signs, and stars. This map has been one of Egypt's most complete sky maps. And again, it indicates that it has equal parts of astrology and ritual associated with it. And then we have the Chinese. Ooh, Dunhuang. Is that correct? I looked it up. I believe that's so. Dunhuang Star Atlas. This was found, this is dated to the 7th to 10th CE. This is the oldest complete star atlas in the world. It was painted on a scroll. It still exists. It shows constellations with remarkable accuracy, proving the ancient China's stargazers were systematic as well as spiritual. It's amazing. It's amazing to me that some of these things still exist on our planet. And then we have, I am looking this one up. Hold on. I have my notes. This is the Chunsang Yulcha Bunyajidu. Chunsang Yulcha Bunyajidu. That's probably still wrong. I apologize. This is from the 7th to the 10th. Oh no, I'm sorry. This was from 1395 CE. This is a stone carved map with 1467 stars and 264 constellations. It was created to fit Korea's latitude. It's both science and sovereignty. This had to do with heaven as well as the new Joseon dynasty. And then we have the Maya Dresden Codex. Look at how cool this is! It's pre-Columbian. This was a painted bark paper book that holds Venus and lunar tables so precise that they modern rival or they rival modern astronomy. Do you remember that show? Oh no, now I can't remember. A something tale, one of you will help me, about the little mice. And there's the song Somewhere Out There, right? And even though I know how far apart we are, it helps to think we might be looking on the same bright star. Remember that? That song always sticks with me, thinking about how much more the same we are than different. But I also think it's amazing to think that, millennia ago, people were looking at the same stars that we're looking at now. They haven't changed much. And they were drawing out the things that they were seeing the same way we do now. Are we really all that different? Not really. An American tale, right? It was an American tale. That tale was TAIL. Yep, okay, I got it. Yes. Lillian said, great. Now all I have in my head is Linda Ronstadt. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Then we have the Nebra Sky Disk. Look at this. Actually, Nebra, sorry, the Nebra Sky Disk. A bronze disk that was inlaid with a gold sun, moon, and stars, and most likely the Pleiades, along with arcs marking the solstices. Incredible. 1600 BCE from Germany. And then we have the Marshall Islands stick charts. This is so freaking cool. So, this was pre-colonial 20th century frameworks of sticks and shells that encoded wave patterns, currents, and the islands. Navigators memorized them on land and then read the stars and swells at sea. They weren't just maps, they were a way of becoming part of the ocean's rhythm. Amazing. Well, see, Sid, you're going to have to go watch American Tail now, just so you can listen to that damn song. All right, these are the Carolinian Polynesian star compasses. A mental rows of star risings and settings used to sail thousands of miles. These were passed down orally. It was a much There was a written chart, but also a chant that people memorized in order to be able to find their way home. And then we have the Mayan. This is El Caracol. El Caracol. This is a round tower whose windows and axes align with Venus's extreme positions. When Venus appeared in the sky, rulers acted because the temple itself told them it was time. Now we know that sometimes their spirituality would not be something that we would condone today, because we know that some of these cultures did things like a human sacrifice and stuff. But in their time, this was how they operated. It's how they worshipped. This is 10th century CE. And then we have the Maya E groups. This is the triadic temple complexes that are oriented to solar positions. So they were observatories, but they were also ritual stages where cosmic cycles were held, well, where ceremony was held during cosmic cycles. The cosmos was a huge part of Mayan religion, government, and spirituality. And then we have, and it still just blows my mind that these things are still standing. And then we have the Incan, move to the notes. Washangtun. Washangtun. This is Machu Picchu. What's that big handle thing right there? Well, that is what the priests used to tie the earth to, or tie the sun to the earth. It was considered the hitching post of the sun, and at solstices, priests had a process, a ceremony, to tie the sun to the earth so that it would return each year. Amazing. And then we have the Incan Seca. So the Incan Seca, this is the Incan Seca system. So there were 41 ritual lines that radiated from the Sun Temple that linked 300 plus shrines or huacas. And people that have studied this system see it as both a human map of time and the cosmos. So again, blending astronomy with social order and history. I find it interesting that throughout time, cultures have found it necessary to find some way to write their history. I mean, obviously, it was also much of it was oral, right? There's a lot of oral stuff that we've lost over the years, but for time immemorial, cultures have found it necessary to write their history to be sure that who they were and what they were doing was immemorialized in some way, whether it was through being inscribed in actual books or being inscribed like petroglyphs in rocks, or it was on a scroll. And again, through chants and songs and stories, I think it's all really fascinating. Why is it that human beings, long before the age of technology, felt such a compulsion to record their history? I mean, I'm sure there's obvious answers, but I just still think it's really fascinating that even from ancient times, people felt like they needed to share their story. I think in some ways, and I'm sure there's an argument against this, but in some ways to me, people need to and want to be heard, right? They just want to be heard. They want to matter. When they're gone, they want somebody to remember them. Maybe. I'm sure there's a lot more answers than that, but I know that it's human nature to want to be heard. All right. Then we have the Sun Dagger from the Faja Butte. So this was found in Chaco Canyon, 1000 to 1200 CE. Slabs of rock that cast dagger-like beams of light onto spiral petroglyphs, marking solstices and the rare 18.6-year lunar standstill. So this was a cosmic calendar that was carved into stone and shadow and that lined up perfectly with solstice events. Amazing. All right, then we have the Bighorn Medicine Wheel in Montana. This one is so amazing too. Or Wyoming, sorry, Montana. This was dated to 1200 to 1700 CE. This is a ring of stones with cairns that line up with solstices, sunrises, and stars like the Aldebaran and Rigel. Here, the ceremony and star watching were inseparable. They were one and the same. Isn't that amazing? Now ask me why I have never been to Wyoming to find this. I haven't. Maybe you can't get anywhere near it. I don't know. But isn't that amazing? And then we have the Hopewell Earthworks from Ohio. Have you ever seen these before or heard of this? I had not. From 1000 BCE to 400 CE. These were octagonal and circular mounds aligned to the lunar standstill cycle. Imagine carrying the moon's long rhythm in the very geometry of your land. Yeah. They actually built these mounds with the intention of mapping out the moon phases. Isn't that incredible? Yeah, if I figure it out, Lillian, and go, I will definitely take a detailed diary for you guys. Okay, now this is from Greece, and I think this is absolutely amazing. But I'm going to look at my notes so that I pr pronounce it correctly. This is the. Sometimes my notes don't even help. The Antikythera. The Antikythera. The Antikythera mechanism, it's a bronze gear-driven computer that predicted eclipses, tracked planets, and even noted Greek festival cycles. It was cosmic order rendered in wheels and cogs. Isn't that amazing? Just amazing. And then the Farnese Atlas. You did not know you were going to see a naked man on my show today, but here we are. So this is a marble statue of Atlas. This is the second CE copy of an earlier Greek globe. So this is an idea that had been built on over millennia. So this is a statue of Atlas holding a celestial globe with 41 constellations. There has been debates on whether it's based on Hipparchus's lost catalog, but it either way, it put the sky in stone in its rendering. Amazing, right? Right? That's a lot to carry on your shoulders, right, Lillian? I think we all feel that way sometimes. Yeah. So that's what I discovered on these topics, and I just thought this was so fun and fascinating. I know I probably should have been a history teacher. Maybe, I don't know. Only if I can talk about this stuff. Oh, Sherry said they put that on a building in Tulsa. Interesting. Yeah. No, Lillian. Okay. But my last thought on that was me get back to Luminous now. Sorry for all the jumping around of screens, but the tech is great, but also sometimes there we go. Sometimes there's just a lot. Quelly's delirious here at the end of the school day. Oh, I'll bet you are. Oh, Lordy. You know, I did home daycare for 10 years. I feel this to my core. I know it's not the same, but kids. So yes, it is. All right. So I have a ritual idea for you for this evening or some evening if you're feeling compelled to manage the stars yourself. Step outside and look up and choose a bright star or a planet. You don't have to know its name. You can if you want, but you don't have to. And whisper a story into the night about why it shines, your own origin tale, in your own words. You could even make it about something that happened today, or in your world, or in your life, right? But come up with your own origin story and link it to a star. When you do that, you're standing with the Pawnee priests, the Maya scribes, the Egyptian temple painters, the Polynesian navigators. We've all used the stars to help us navigate through the world in some way. It is something that binds us all together. We are much more the same than we are different. Kelly's article in Refeminist History this week is called, and there's a podcast as well. There's a link here. But When Whistleblowing Blows Back, Why Women Pay the Price for Speaking Up. Why do they? When women speak up, what are they accused of? Attention seeking, liars, drama queens. Why is that? She has some great thoughts here. All right. My tip this week is the vastness of the universe meditation, and we're going to do that together here in a few minutes. Christy's energy exercise is the divine spark. Of course, lots of crime over at True Crime. And lots of meditations at Planet Meditation. So there you go. That is Luminous this week. Oh, let's see. Okay. I have a lot of windows open. I got a lot going on over here. I'm going to get a setup for our meditation. But while I do that, I want to invite you guys. There we go. To just get relaxed, get yourself to a place of peace, a spot where you can just focus completely on what we're doing. This is one of those meditations that some people would rather watch and sit quietly with, and that's fine. Or that you may want to close your eyes and get completely comfy, and that's fine too. Totally up to you. But I'm going to pull it up onto the screen so that I can partake with you guys, and I'll see you on the other side of it. Okay, deep breaths. Beautiful. The music was music I bought from a binaural beats artist to use in meditations. Yeah, I love that one. It just feels so soothing for your soul. And I've said this many times. Too quick, right? You could have sunk into that one for hours, huh? That's a good one. I've said this many times, and I'm going to say it again. In a world of chaos that we are currently in a world where everyone wants you to be mad all the time and pick a side and fight for it. And if you're doing that, no hate to you, no shade. We all do that to some degree as human nature. So please don't let me make you feel like I'm criticizing anything. I'm not. But it's hard to find peace. It's really hard to find peace. And I think that daily meditation is a way to do that. If you've ever had a moment of saying, I just want to flee, I just want to get out of here, I just want to remove myself, not from the planet, of course, but just from your situation or your housing or your country or whatever it is that has you feeling so caged in, meditation. If you feel incredibly unpeaceful, meditation. If you feel like you're not being heard by anyone around you, go within. Meditation. I've said it a lot the last few years, but it seems like things just continue to get harder, and I wish that wasn't the case. But this is an incredibly important time for spiritual self-care. I would say for empaths, because it is, but also for everybody. Yes, this world is soul-sucking. You don't have to give your soul up. You don't. In fact, please don't. And if you feel like you are, first of all, call me and let's get you balanced and centered and back into your body. Because one of the things that I keep feeling like is happening is that with all of the chaos in our world, people are ending up incredibly ungrounded. And then you consume social media and it's just one inflammatory, awful thing after another that just continues to unground you. And when you're really ungrounded, what does that result in? Anxiety, depression, a huge lack of being able to balance yourself, a lack of being able to make good decisions, and a complete aside from your goals. A complete aside from your goals. That's the worst part, right? If you are kept in constant chaos and you are constantly ungrounded and you're constantly focused on the harder things in life, and you're going to be sometimes, no shade, right? You're going to be. This is life. This is just how it goes sometimes. But I'll tell you what, it makes it hard as hell to be able to make decisions that are in your best interest, and it makes it so hard to accomplish your goals. Years ago, when I studied generational poverty, one of the hallmarks of generational poverty is living in survival mode every day. And when you live in survival mode every day, you make the decision that satisfies today. Maybe it's going to screw you over tomorrow. Maybe you're going to steal the loaf of bread today to feed your family, regardless of whether it puts you in jail tomorrow. I know that's an outrageous, that's a long stretch. I get it. But do you see what I'm saying? When you're in survival mode, you're living for today. You have to fill the needs of today. You have to staunch the bleeding. You have to tend to the wound right now, regardless. Say you're out rock climbing. I know we all do that, right? And your friend falls and they have a compound fracture and they're bleeding out. What do you do? You're going to put a tourniquet on their leg, right? Maybe you have one in your first aid kit, or maybe you make one out of somebody's clothing or their belt or their strap or whatever. You're going to put a tourniquet on that leg. Does your tourniquet mean that they're going to lose their leg? Maybe. Maybe it could happen. But if you don't, what happens? They bleed out and die. So you're in this position where you have to make a decision that has a terrible outcome, maybe. But you don't really have much of a choice. Something has to be done, right? You have to stop the bleeding somehow, or they're not going to live. That's what living in survival mode feels like. We are in a world right now that wants you to be in survival mode. I don't know why. Maybe we're just easier to control or easier to distract, or maybe it's just the way things are. I don't know. But what I know is, when we are all living in survival mode, you cannot accomplish your goals. You can't make great decisions for tomorrow. You're too busy worrying about everything that's on your plate in front of your face right now. If the house is burning down, you have to do something about the house burning down, right? So, with all of that being said, yeah, a fearful society is a controlled society. Yes. And that doesn't matter what your ideals are. It doesn't matter what side of anything you stand on. If we're all in fear and chaos and fighting with each other all the time, we are damn easy to control. So, meditation, spiritual self-care, drumming, singing bowls, flutes, solfeggio tones, binaural beats. Maybe you're already doing those things. Awesome. And also, and obviously, very limited interaction with social media right now. Just very limited. If your social media is enraging you, get off of it. If it's keeping you from doing what you need to do in your life, stop. Go watch a movie or listen to an audiobook or do something else instead. You don't have to spend your time there if it's not feeding your spirit. And I'm talking to myself as much as I'm talking to you guys. This is a really, really potent time to create peace within yourself so that you can send those shockwaves of peace out into your immediate world. This is a place that you can, without a doubt, nurture yourself and care for yourself and find meaning and purpose in the things that are important to you, regardless of what's going on in the world. So it is my greatest wish for all of you, myself included, that we unplug more. We do more creative things. We do more things with our hands. We meditate more. We spend more time outside and we worry a whole lot less about what shitty things somebody around us on social media is saying. It's not feeding you. It's not feeding me. Why are we falling for this? No more, right? No. Let's just link arms together and take care of ourselves and take care of each other. And know that we can make the world a better place just by being in our own peace. You are a collective. We are a part of the whole. So how you do and what you do, it matters. Make it matter in a positive way. Thank you so much for being here. This has been yet another production of The Katie Weaver Show here on 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way you listen to the world.